Alfred Bruff, Sportsnet 650. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski going to join us in a moment here. Before we get to Wish, we need to tell you that hour two of this program, the official automotive sponsor of the Halford & Bruff Show, is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Three dealerships to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. At the end of this segment, we will circle back and do our daily poll question brought to you by Regal Grooming Lounge, bringing a world-class experience to the classic barbershop. Visit them at regalgrooming.ca. It's more Canucks in nature. We will have a lot more Canucks talk, obviously, as this show goes along. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour to recap what happened in the home opener 3-2 loss to the Minnesota Wild last night. But for now, we focus on the NHL picture at large with our good buddy from ESPN, Greg Wyshynski, here on the Halford & Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Wish?
I mean, do you still technically have to call it Halford & Bruff if it's just you? Just, like, grab the mantle, man. No one's going to care. The Mike Halford Show.
Dom chopped up the audio for it to say, you're listening to the Halford and Halford Show today. And I was like, that's not bad. It feels like a lot, but at the same time, it's kind of clever. But yeah, no, I'm riding solo today. It's just me, so it's just you and me today, buddy.
Do you need me to just do a Jason impression the entire time to kind of fill the void?
Shows are depressing enough as is, bud. We don't need that.
You know, I was talking to my buddy the other day, and my buddy said, "There."
See, you're good. You get the. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. So, the very underrated Bruffism is that he's always got a buddy that's always told him a story that somehow relates to what we're talking about. Also, you nailed the pitch and tenor.
Kind of crazy how that happens. It's almost Trumpian, to be honest with you, in the sense of, like, many people are saying that such and such as a transition into some story.
Okay, we do. This is always going to be a hard transition whenever we talk about what I've, like, kind of coined just as a phrase for the day of reckoning in Chicago. It's very much what it was yesterday with the Blackhawks organization. The numerous takeaways that I had, Wish, at the top was that I was almost taken aback at how transparent everything was, if only because we kind of heard whispers and rumblings that maybe the investigation wasn't getting the kind of cooperation that people thought it deserved, or that the findings weren't going to be made public. I mean, this was made very public, and I say reckoning because everyone that was involved with that 2010 now is now no longer with the organization. So I guess it was a bombshell of a day, to put it mildly.
It really was. And I agree with you. I think we got more out of that report than maybe we thought we would. I got to tell you, man, like my biggest takeaway from yesterday was just my utter inability now to look at the 2010 Stanley Cup championship in any way other than they valued that win more than humanity.
Yeah.
They valued that win more than the safety of one of their players. And it's hard to get around that fact. And, to read the details of senior management on that team, including Joel Quenneville, sitting in a room and discussing this thing, and the prevailing thought coming from that meeting being, we don't want this to be a distraction, or let's not, you know, rock the boat as we press on towards the Stanley Cup. And, you know, guys like John McDonough saying, you only get one shot at this. Mm-hmm. It's just depressing. It's just depressing to think that that's where the attention was and that's how the decisions were made. And honestly, dude, the other takeaway I had from it was, if this wasn't an extra, if this wasn't a minor leaguer tagging along with the team as a black ace that was being impacted by a sexual harasser at the thought at the time, and then a sexual assaulter, as we come to find out later, and it's like Taves or Kane, like, what's the reaction then? It almost feels like they felt like they could ignore this because it wasn't an essential part of the team, and that's even more disgusting.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And the comments that really struck me were the ones that were quoted, and it was essentially the Quenneville talk, right, where he was really agitated in the meeting, and that, you know, he was maybe understood more than anyone about the importance, because it is the cup, and this is, you know, you might only get one shot at this. And I kept going back to that because not only was that damning, but the fact that he publicly issued a statement which was completely contradicted yesterday, I feel like it's such a difficult thing for anyone to stomach, because Quenneville is now going to be out there on a nightly basis as a front-facing member of the Florida Panthers. I mean, he's behind the bench in all their games. He's subjected to the fans every game, and it's really hard to reconcile what he did or didn't do and then still think that, oh, he's going to be gainfully employed in the NHL.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but before I embarked on my award-winning career as a sports writer, I was in public relations.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they told me in college I could make more money doing that, which, honestly, kind of true, but didn't work out that way. And so sometimes I approach these things with my PR hat on. And if you look at what Stan Bowman did yesterday in putting out his statement, all he did was throw John McDonough under the bus.
Correct.
Like, just hurled him under the bus.
Yes.
Like, it was incredible how much the buck was passed to John McDonough. And I think when it comes to Kevin Cheveldayoff of the Winnipeg Jets, the general manager there, I mean, he's kind of on a lower rung on that ladder than Stan Bowman, Joel Quenneville, and John McDonough,
yeah.
Right? So I think Chevy, even though he's going to have to explain how he conveniently forgot a meeting that he clearly attended, is going to be able to say, hey, I wasn't in a position to do anything. You know, it was everybody else's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately that's where it falls with Quenneville.
Okay.
Is kind of the, well, I just assumed that Stan Bowman and John McDonough were going to take care of this situation, and I had a team to coach. And that might be the sort of out for him. Now, the thing that's sort of the X factor in both these situations is Gary Bettman. You know, Bettman's going to meet with Quenneville. Bettman's going to meet with Cheveldayoff. Don't be naive to think that the league isn't privy to and doesn't contribute to the decisions that are made internally on these teams when it comes to an investigation like this. Like, they are clearly looped in on the fate of Stan Bowman and things like that. And, you know, they levied a $2 million fine against the team as well yesterday. So it is going to be interesting that if the league feels there needs to be some further punishment for either of these guys, there's going to be further punishment. But otherwise, I would not be shocked to see both of them kind of, you know, kick the can down the road and say, well, I thought the GM and the president would take care of this situation.
Yeah, because we briefly talked this morning about the we went back and covered what happened yesterday. We did like the newsy recap. And I said, but I think the important thing here is maybe to focus on what's next, because there's going to be further ramifications. We know that Quenneville and we know that Cheveldayoff are going to speak with the commissioner. We also know that Kyle Davidson is going to take over as an interim GM now that Bowman's out. Bowman, shortly after the Blackhawks released their statement and he stepped down as the general manager there, also then stepped down as the general manager for the U.S. Olympic team at the 2022 Olympics. Do you have any idea on where USA Hockey goes from here?
Well, I mean, straight to the gold medal. I mean, let's get that out of the way first.
Very well done.
So, you know, the way it kind of plays out right now is Bill Guerin was the assistant GM named when Bowman was. Everyone I've talked to anticipates that they'll just be the chain of command kept intact and he'll be elevated to that job within the next couple of weeks, you know, barring anything unforeseen. I mean, he's got his own investigations going on, too, from a situation that happened in Pittsburgh while he was there. The other guy is John Van Beesbroek, who's a player development guy for USA Hockey. I think there's zero chance he'll become the general manager of Team USA, given his baggage. And then you start to think, okay, well, you know, is there a chance in a time of crisis they harken back to previous GMs? And Brian Burke obviously was the GM in 2010. Reached out to him yesterday and didn't really get anything back as far as what his status could be. And then Dean Lombardi was the GM in 2014. And obviously he doesn't have a current NHL gig as a general manager. So who knows there? So the smart money is on Guerin getting elevated to the big chair. But who knows if they turn to another person in a situation where they've got to, you know, continue developing a player pool and pick the team within short order. It wouldn't surprise me to see them rely on a more veteran voice in this process on the level of a Stan Bowman versus turning the keys over to Guerin, who has only been in the GM chair for the Wild for a couple seasons.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650 or the Halford and Halford Show. I'll let you guys call it whatever you want. You can decide. You can weigh in at the Dunbar Lumber text line if you want at 650-650. Wish, the on-ice product last night, we were obviously all here focused on the Canucks home opener, a 3-2 loss to the Minnesota Wild. But there was another game of significance just down the road. Seattle Kraken get their first ever win at Climate Pledge, which I have since renamed Lemon Pledge Arena, a 5-1 victory over the Montreal Canadiens. So there's two the big takeaways here, obviously. One, Kraken get that first win at home in front of their fans, which is great. For me, though, because I love focusing on a good tire fire and a train wreck, the Habs are an unmitigated disaster right now. I saw the visuals of Jeff Petrie and Josh Anderson doing their post-game press afterwards, and they looked like they were attending a funeral. This is another blowout loss for the Habs. They have one win, and I believe it's seven so far. And the wheels just continue to spin to the point where you feel like they're going to fall off this wagon. Montreal is a mess right now.
They are. And by the way, I like your Lemon Pledge thing, because then we can make a place where there are no streaks joke as well. It's pretty good.
God, we're good.
So, yeah, the Habs are a complete mess. And we kind of knew that they would be impacted severely with what Jonathan Drouin said yesterday with the retirement of Shea Weber, speaking out of turn. Him being out of the lineup was going to impact them. Then obviously the Carey Price situation coming at them as quickly as it did, and then his status being uncertain through the first month of the season has certainly impacted them as well. I mean, that's a guy that you could put out there and stop a losing streak, theoretically. So there's two giant blows that kind of knocked them off kilter. And the bottom line is this, man. Like, this was a team that barely made the playoffs. They went on a hell of a run last year. Can't take that away from them. But by no means did you look at this roster last season and say, okay, they're going to make a giant leap into contender status. I mean, I don't know anybody who really had Montreal ahead of the big three in the Atlantic Division, or in many cases, even in fourth position in that division. So it's not a shock to see them not succeed, but obviously, given all of the other situations that have happened to them in the early part of the season, I think it does kind of explain why they've been as bad as they've been. But they're pretty bad.
At the other end of things, there are four teams that are really, really good to start the season. So good, in fact, that they're perfect. I believe the email from the NHL said it's the first time in league history that four teams are off to perfect 5-0-0 starts or better. I actually asked Bourne this question yesterday, so I'll throw it at you. Florida is 6-0-0. St. Louis is 5-0-0. Carolina's 5-0-0. And Edmonton is 5-0-0. So all these teams have a perfect 1,000 points percentage. Of the four, Greg, as I asked Justin Bourne from Sportsnet yesterday, who is the most legit, Florida, St. Louis, Carolina, or Edmonton?
Great question. I would think total package-wise, it's probably Florida.
That's what Bourne went with, too.
But, I mean, that St. Louis team is better than a lot of people think they are. And you have to remember that last season they didn't have Parayko healthy or playing like Parayko for the entirety of that season. And he's a very big part of that team. The Tarasenko situation seems to have resolved itself.
Yeah.
You got to give Doug Armstrong credit for playing that hand correctly. And they've got a lot of weapons on that roster, and they're a pretty interesting team. I'm not quite sure if at the end of the day they can get over the hump that is going to be some of the better teams in the West, although jury's out on who those teams might be at this point. But they are a very interesting team, and better than I think a lot of people think they're going to be. I think we kind of view the Blues as one of those teams that hit their peak, won their cup, and now it's all downhill from there. They might have another little boomerang up the standings and a chance to do it again with the group that they have there. They're really a really well put together roster.
I'm glad you brought them up, because one, no one paid attention to the summer that they had, which was actually pretty good when you get Buchnevich and Saad in, and no real major losses. Everyone assumed that Tarasenko was going to be gone, but he wasn't. When they got the doors blown off them by Colorado in the playoffs, I remember everyone was toe-tagging. It's like, well, the Blues are old and slow now, and this is the end of this brief little window that they had. And then all of a sudden, Doug Armstrong deserves a ton of credit, because they didn't necessarily turn it over to the young guys, but the young guys started playing a more prominent role. Like, I've been watching them, like, Kyrou's really good. Klim Kostin's finally playing for them, and he's making things happen. Buchnevich is young, and he came in. The Blues do have a very good way about them in terms of, you know, knowing when to turn the page without having to bottom out. They've moved from generation to generation kind of seamlessly, and they're always hanging around, and they're doing it again right now.
Yeah, and, you know, you just named a bunch of people that didn't get traded for Ryan O'Reilly, and that's also part of the equation.
Yes,
too,
that is very right?
Like,
true.
It's holding on to your top prospects and making sure that they can fill out the lineup when you do go out and acquire you know, big name talent, which I think is a good lesson for all the people, you know, jockeying to try to trade for Jack Eichel right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. And sort of the meticulous rebuilding of this team after big name players leave, like Alex Pietrangelo, they go out and get Torrey Krug. Well, Torrey Krug's a very good player, and he's contributed offensively this season. And, you know, that you look at that blue line with him and Parayko and Falk, and you're like, you know, yeah, it's pretty good. And then you look at the lineup, and, you know, Jaden Schwartz, I've never been a huge fan of his game. I think he's always been way too inconsistent for me. Then you slide in a Buznevich and a Saad. You're like, all right, well, that's a bit of an upgrade right there. So they've kind of quietly and meticulously rebuilt this roster into something that's pretty impressive. And I don't know what it all adds up to, but I do know this, that when it comes to their playoff disasters that have occurred since they won the Cup,
mm-hmm.
it all tracks back to Binnington. And people slag on Binnington all the time. He's a really good regular season goalie. Like, not only in his success and his wins and losses and getting them into the playoffs, but analytically, if you talk to people inside the goaltending community, he does things that are really good that don't necessarily show up in the traditional stats. But he hasn't won a playoff game since they won the Cup.
Right.
And you can't get around that. And it's not simply just like bad bounces and bad luck. He's been awful. He's been really bad. And so they're only going to go as far as Binnington's going to take them in the playoffs. And if he's got some sort of postseason yips thing going on, then all of this is for naught.
Binnington also potentially Canada's number one at the aforementioned 2022 Olympics. That whole scenario with the Canadian goaltending, I don't even really want to discuss it because it's not looking great right now. So we'll move along. We kind of ticked off a couple of the more troubled teams in the NHL already in this call. We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. We dealt with the Chicago Blackhawks and their situation in the Day of Reckoning in Chicago. We talked about the Montreal Canadiens, now 1-6 on the year after a blowout loss in Seattle. Special mention, I think, for one of the worst teams I've ever seen constructed, at least in recent memory, the Arizona Coyotes. In another question that we've been throwing out to guests, who's going to finish with more wins this year, the Arizona Cardinals or the Arizona Coyotes?
Oh, the Coyotes will figure it out. I mean, you know,
will they?
I think they'll finish with more wins than the Cardinals. The Cardinals, of course, being a really, really great team.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in awe of how bad they are.
They're shockingly bad.
But that's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's been we always talk about how the Coyotes have never like been successful and such, but they've just never been bad enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like to construct a team that is as miserable and awful and inept as this team is really a tribute to Bill Armstrong. Because there's no possibility of this team punching above its weight.
No.
You look at Buffalo right now, and like, yeah, it's probably the early season aberration thing that they do every season. But like, if it's not, and they're just sort of like kind of competitive, like what good does that do? They're going to have to trade Jack Eichel. Go get Shane Wright. Like,
yeah.
Like what are you doing? but if you're Arizona, you know the only path back is to just strip mine this team. And they've done that for the most part. And they also did something that a lot of these teams that try to tank never do, which is to make sure their goaltending is going to be ECHL level.
Yeah.
That's the key.
That is the key.
I remember when the Devils had a shot at Austin Matthews, right? And Corey Schneider played really well down the stretch. I'm like, you schmuck, what are you doing? Stop it. We can get a franchise center here. So you got to make sure you don't have a goalie that could, you know, add 10 points to your total.
Yeah, well, and Carter Hutton got hurt last night.
That's going to screw up everything.
Yeah, Carter Hutton got hurt last night, so you can throw that. Everything is going to plan in the desert in terms of goaltending. I think that same situation you were talking about with Schneider and the Devils, I think that happened. I think it was Michael Neuwirth when he was with the Sabres, when they were in active tank mode, and his goaltending was too good. So they traded him straight up. I think it was for maybe Halak, I want to say. And it was just, we need a goalie that's going to be worse. So please give us one. And, you know, that is a key part of this. Is you can't have a goalie bailing you out. If you're going to be bad, you need to be bad all over the shop. And I mean, kudos to the Coyotes. They certainly have that right now.
If I was a general manager right now and I tried to get the number one pick in the draft, you know who my goalies would be? It would be a shooter tutor from practice and Chico Resch. That's who I would have as my goalies right now.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Wish, you mentioned the surprising Buffalo Sabres. How much longer till the bottom falls out on this one?
Well, I was just talking to somebody the other day about this. For three straight years, I wrote the same story, which is, hey, hot start for the Sabres. Maybe they're turning the corner. I actually remember talking to Jack Eichel like 2 years ago and being like, hey, is this for real this time? It was like when Ralph Kruger was the coach and he was like the really happy camper. And he's like, I think it might be. I think we're going to do it. And then like by American Thanksgiving, they're in the basement.
Yeah, it was
so
good.
It's going to be the same thing now. I mean, the thing that they had and one of the smartest decisions made by any team, it turns out, was getting Craig Anderson out of retirement. Because Craig Anderson is very good at one thing, which is to look like Dominic Hasek for 2 week stretches and then not look and then look like, you know, Dom from your local deli for the next 2 weeks, right? So you know, that's what's kind of happening now is he's playing really, really well and they're playing well in front of him. And, you know, I'm happy for Don Granato. I'm happy he got his shot. And I think that he's going to be able to get something out of this team. But by no means do I think they're going to keep punching above their weight like this, you know, skating into Tampa and beating the heck out of the Lightning and things like that. I mean, it just isn't sustainable. But good on them for coming out of the gate strong. And who knows? I mean, the only thing that gives me pause about writing the eulogy for the Sabres is this could be like Ewing theory all over.
Right.
Could be like, hey, take Jack Eichel out of the equation. All of a sudden, the pieces fit a different way. And maybe there's a certain bit of defiance going on there, too. Who knows? The one thing I do love and the best thing about the Sabres run, and it's not every Buffalo fan. It's a small pack of Buffalo fans. But this incredible delusion of maybe if we keep winning, Jack will love us again and he'll want to be part of this again. And he'll come back because we're successful. And I'm like, yes, he definitely will want to come and play for the franchise that won't allow him to get the surgery he wants.
Wait, this sentiment actually exists?
I've seen it.
Oh,
now,
my
it could
God.
Be tongue-in-cheek. It could be, and I'm not, again, this is not majority Sabres fans. But I have seen this, like kind of like wishing on a star sentiment of a, what if we're good now? You know, his problem was that we weren't good, but now perhaps we are good. And I'm just like, nah, I think the ship has sailed.
it's sailed. One final thing before we let you go. I want to preview tonight's action. It's not an especially heavy night in the NHL. I believe it's only 5 games. That Boston-Florida game looks like it could be a good one. 2 top 10 teams in the NHL, both off to very good starts. But I got a feeling that everybody is going to be paying attention to that Toronto-Chicago game tonight, if only because of all the stuff that's happening in and around both of these franchises right now. That, to me, it just kind of jumps off the pages when I was like, ooh, that's really intriguing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned Buffalo. I mean, that's Buffalo. We're talking about the Sabres here. You're talking about Boston and Florida, right?
Mm.
And, I mean, that game to me is fascinating just because I it's the kind of game where we're going to learn a lot about the Panthers, you know?
Sure.
And I want to learn more about the Panthers. I mean, I was really teetering on the brink of making them maybe my cup finalist out of the East.
Wow.
Okay. There's a lot of things about them that I really like. I think they're really well put together. I think the fact that they've gotten, they've collected all the Sams in the league outside of Sam Girard. And that allows them to kind of fill out that lineup in a way that they've not been able to before. So I'm intrigued by it, and this is the kind of test that I think we need to see them pass more of before we really know what they are as far as being a contender.
Wish, you're the best, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this again next Wednesday.
You got it. Thanks.